At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We're getting close to fifth ideal territory, or what? Also, I'll go ahead and get it out there. I've got to make the joke. I've been holding on to this one for a while. Does this count as Kaladin and Syl's first kiss?
No, because it specifically says the wind is playing the flute, not Kaladin.
No.
Kaladin doesn't play the Syl flute, the wind does. Welcome back to Following No One on a Stormlight Podcast. This week we are in episode 262, and we are covering Wind and Truth, chapters 105 all the way through 110, despite what Tim told us to do. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we're really sticking it to Tim right now. We're mixing up our chapters because we want to. We're rebelling against the system in place.
I have joined Zeth's rebellion against the unmade of Tim assigning chapters. Tim, Elliot, how are you?
Tim, the chapter assigner. Yeah.
Correct.
No, I actually see Tim over there as like singing in his corner, like nobody goes off trail. And we're just like constantly going off trail.
Yeah, that's fair. But how are you?
I'm doing fine. I stayed on the trail. I'm a good little not hobbit, Hartford. So I'm alive and well.
Sounds good. We have several different things to cover this week. Elliot, can you summarize them for us? 1-5 all the way through 110, despite what
I can definitely attempt. Six chapters here. Let's see if we can hit them all. Chapter 105. Navani is still in the spiritual realm, going through visions, trying to figure out what's going on. She's specifically trying to find Gavinor, is what she's made it her mission to do. They've lost Gavinor. She's trying to find him, and she realizes, oh, I'm in Kolinar. I know where Gavinor actually was during this time. He was with his mother Aes Sedain and being tormented by Spren. So she's learned how to manipulate the visions a little bit, so she's doing that. She's making her way. She meets up with Elokar, and they go and they grab Gavinor. They get Gavinor. They get him out. There's some terrifying scenes here as Navani is trying to get Gavinor out, and Elokar, who's actually Odium, apparently, like in these scenes, is just taunting her, just like driving those screws in as hard as he can to taunt Navani with the death of her son in this scene that she's witnessing. Crazy stuff. End of the chapter, though, Navani gets out. She's able to kind of link up with the sibling. They use kind of the point of, like, the title of the chapter is like transition point or something like that. They use the oath gate that's there in Kolinar to get out. They make it out. They're good. There's a little bit of Venli stuff at the end of chapter 105, but I didn't really take any notes on it. She's still trying to come up with a plan. Chapter 106 is flashback Zeth. He has discovered the truth, capital T truth, and is trying to spread the good news. We've got to rise up against this unmade that is ruling all of Shinnevar, and nobody's listening to him. That's kind of the entirety of 106. 107 is back in the point of view, crazy point of view of Tanavast as the vessel of honor and the kind of ongoing battle we've got going on with Raze and Odium. Tanavast is like witnessing the total destruction of Ashen. And then he sees Yezrian make peace with Nael, Nael's family, Nael's people. So we kind of see that little bit of linking up happening there. Chapter 108, Zeth is back in the modern day, and he's approaching the Skybreaker Monastery. And they know they're going to face Nael when they get there. Zeth is still kind of torn between, do I walk away from this? Do I keep killing? Do I keep following orders? What do I do? They get there. Sure enough, Nail is there. Nail's challenge is, all right, my challenge to you is obey. And Zeth's like, no, I can't do that, but I also don't want to fight you. So Kaladin steps up to the fight. Zeth, we're going to talk about this quite a bit, I'm sure, in this chapter. So Kaladin steps in to fight Nail in place of Zeth, and they have a big old duel. That duel keeps going on through 109 and 110. So we're going to spend like all of 109 and 110 talking about what exactly goes down in this giant duel. Tons of things happening here. Crazy events. New weirdness going on with magic, song, flute, all the things. Happily ever after by the end. Sort of.
Paul, do you have two words for those chapters?
I do. I do. Several chapters here. Just two words. My two words are remembrance and music. And I think those are fairly self-explanatory. They go hand in hand, and they are referring to Nail and Kaladin and those epic scenes that we're going to talk about with our last two chapters. Really awesome stuff, some big breakthroughs, and some neat things to talk about. We'll go into further detail, but I think this was a big moment, a big scene. I feel like I can't put the words to convey that right now, but this is a big deal. A breakthrough with Nail, Nalani Lin. Like, this is big stuff.
Elliot?
The two words I picked are choice and challenge, because we've got some big choices the characters, like really hard choices the characters are having to make. Navani has this choice between staying to connect with Elokar and also staying to help Dalinar, or taking her opportunity to grab Gavinor and get out. And she chooses the latter, but it's not an easy choice for sure. So fairly challenging choice. Later on, Zeth has to make a really big choice of, do I fight or do I not? It's kind of felt like the culmination moment of a lot of buildup with Nail on one shoulder and Kaladin on the other, kind of talking him two different ways. And he finally chooses and kind of picks the middle path. He kind of picks this compromise of the two of them. But then that culminates in this giant challenge of facing down none other than the Herald, Nail.
Yes, indeed. I assume that'll be the bulk of our episode here, but let's start with Navani, because that's where 105 starts. She has navigated her way to Kolinar in the spiritual realm the day that Kolinar falls. And I'm trying to remember if she expects the vision to go there because that's going to taunt her the most or give her the most pain, or if she deliberately goes there to try to find Gav, or does she just take advantage of being there?
It's kind of both. She like tricks the vision into taking her there because it's the most painful for her.
Okay. Yeah.
She says that out loud. Oh, it would be the absolute worst if I was to have to witness that. And then the vision takes her there. And it's kind of funny, actually, when she tries that again, like in the presence of Odium, and Odium has the, that's how you're manipulating this moment, and realizes Navani's maybe a little more powerful in here than he thought.
Yeah. And then as she's grabbing Gavinor and headed for the Oath Gate, Taravangian plays the, are you really going to abandon Dalinar in here? You wouldn't leave him like you're leaving Elokar right now. Why are you leaving Dalinar? And correct me if I'm wrong, he doesn't actually have Dalinar. Dalinar is off watching these Tanavast visions, and Taravangian doesn't know where Dalinar is. Correct?
I think you might be right. I don't know for sure.
I think so.
But this definitely, I guess, struck a chord with me of Odium's goal is to attack Dalinar right now. A big way to do that is by attacking Navani. And so it makes perfect sense that if he's in this vision right now that he's going to try to manipulate or play tricks or something. So,
sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think with the interlude that we had previously, that's one of the lines of Taravian Jin's inner dialogue, is that Dalinar is successfully hiding from him in the spiritual realm here. Elliot, you have in the outline, Gavinor is 100% going to the dark side. What did I miss? I agree with this bullet point. I agree that Gavinor is going to be the champion. But what in this chapter is that the final indicator there for you?
Oh yeah, this felt like the nail in the coffin. I'm terrified. So it's on page 1007. And yes, we're in the past 1,000 pages in this book and still have several hundred left to go. The moment is Elokar walks into the room where Navani has grabbed Gavinor. So Navani has found Gavinor, and then Elokar kind of comes in. Keep in mind, Gavinor has been hearing Elokar's voice a bunch. You guys remember this, right? This has come up several times.
Yes.
Gavinor says, I can hear Daddy's voice. I can hear Daddy's voice. He's in here. And then in this moment, Navani sees Elokar and realizes it's not him. Navani realizes this is Odium. And here's what Gavinor says in this scene, in this dialogue. Like, Elokar walks in. Navani knows who this is. Gavinor says, Graham, it's him, Daddy. He's been helping me. I think that's all I need to know that I think this is playing out exactly as we feared, of Odium has pretended to be Elokar and has guided, helped, air quotes happening here for audio only listeners, helped Gavinor through these kinds of things. And we've seen plenty of this where Odium has set up Gavinor to fear Dalinar. Gavinor has witnessed
right.
Dalinar do a bunch of terrible things. End of this chapter, we get out. Navani and Gavinor, they're out. But I think the seed has been planted. The seed has been planted. All Odium now needs to do is appear to Gavinor as Elokar and say, I need you to fight, and I need you to fight that monster that is Dalinar. You've seen it. We've got to stop him. There's a little C connection that's happened here, and I'm terrified.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess I didn't catch the Gavinor dialogue piece there, but you're right. Just that one line is quite the big indicator.
I'm glad you said that, Trevor, because I also didn't pick this up. I read through all of our chapters twice, which, side note, so whenever we finish this book, I'm going to announce that I've read the whole book twice. I don't know if that counts. Technically, yeah. I've read every chapter
twice. Technically, that's correct, twice. Yes.
Technically, I will have read every chapter twice, but it's interesting. Anyways, that's not the point. The point is, I'm glad that you mentioned this, Elliot, because I didn't pick this up either, but you're so right. This makes me feel that we are going to get a Gavinor POV, or maybe an Odium POV. Like, you know, it could be from Todium's perspective, but that is a little detail that is a huge deal. That is not like a little comment that makes you wonder, oh, what's going to happen next? It's like, nope. Odium is manipulating and coercing Gavinor way more than we are seeing. Our characters like stumble upon and find Gavinor, and they're like, okay, good, we still have him. But they're obviously not seeing what's going on. And that is so terrifying. So, Elliot, you said 100% Gavinor is going to the dark side. I agree. Trevor, you said 100% he's Odium's champion. I'm not 100% yet. The problem that I have is that I don't know who else it will be, could be. I guess Moash is an option, but like, I don't know. But the reason I say that is I think Gavinor could be this tool that Odium is going to use to attack Dalinar now before the contest. It is possible that he's used in that regard before we even get to the contest. I realize there's only like a day left to do that.
Yeah, I think it's noon on day 10, so we really only have about 24 hours left.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know how that's going to be. Like, we've got a lot of stuff to see in 24 hours, but I do think that's possible. I am like 99% in the camp of that's where it's headed, is Gavinor is going to be Odium's champion, and they're going to play swords on the final day. So I don't know what that's going to look like. But yeah, anyways, a lot said there, but a lot from a little. But I think we're going to get a point of view chapter that goes into this, because I feel like that's too important not to see. At least some of it, not like every detail, but some of that manipulation.
I think this Kolinar Palace scene this time around would be way more brutal, like in adaptation, than what I just read on page, because you could really pluck on the heartstrings of Navani hearing her son who has died, and she just wants to go talk with him, and he's pleading with her, "Hey, mom, where are you going? Mom, I need your help, mom." And she has to run away from him because it's Taravangian trying to trap her in a vision. Like, but it's a pretty heavy scene if you actually stop to consider it.
And Kaladin's there too, to even put like another point of view in it, where Kaladin's looking at like, what the heck are you doing, woman? Your son is over there dying. Like, we need to go help him. So you could almost play it off as the audience is experiencing it as fake Kaladin is experiencing it, of how could you do this to your son, but having to make that hard choice.
Yeah. At the end of 105, we have a very short Venli point of view, maybe a page. And there's one key line that I want to key into before we go on to 106. Venli meets with Sigzil to hear his plan. Like, you're going to get run off the plateau. All right, I'll listen to your plan. I believe Sigzil's plan is we're going to retreat and then circle back around and right at the last minute jump on the plateau and it's ours. Haha. I was like, okay. Venli's like, that's definitely not going to work. And then right at the end of the chapter, she says, but if we added something of mine to your plan, then it'll work. We just need Jasnah here. And I'm like, okay, what does Jasnah do? Now I'm thinking like they're going to run off the shattered plains and then Elsgate back onto the plateau with like 2 minutes to spare and then say, haha, we got it. That seems kind of gimmicky though to me. What do you guys think?
I didn't think about Elsgates. That's possible. I was just left scratching my head. What does she want Jasnah for? Why is Jasnah the piece of the puzzle here? I'm at a loss. That's a better idea than I came up with. Elsgates, possible. We haven't really seen that though, right? That's like pretty high level Els calling, right? To be able to do a portal like that.
Correct, but presumably she could. And she's
fourth ideal, right?
Yes, she's fourth ideal, and we've seen the Elsgates used by Odium's forces on the Shattered Plains here. Like that's how Moash showed up, is he jumped through an Elsgate via the Unmade that can do that or something, if I remember right, around day five or something like that when Moash showed up. So that there is potential for Elsgate shenanigans to happen on the Shattered Plains, but that seems kind of odd to me. And we just found a perpendicularity. So I don't know. Maybe they're just going to jump into Shadesmar and then run back to the perpendicularity. Anything else for 105? All right. 106. We have a flashback Zeth chapter. And the voice is taunting him. He has successfully created a little rebellion in a little town here. And the voice is like warning him that the other honor bearers are going to come after him. But Zeth thinks he like actually got the upper hand by the info that the voice is chatting with Zeth. So I didn't get too much out of the chapter, but what about you guys?
The voice has posed many problems for me. You know, obviously we know it's an unmade. We've seen not the full extent, but we've certainly seen that it is irrefutably bad. I think there was this notion in the last book and starting going into this book that maybe our unmade were misunderstood. And I'm sure there are people who would still argue that, but I feel like this is a clear example of the unmade just being evil and bad. This one feels like it runs on deception far more than the others. Like you have the thrill, right, that runs off of like an instinctual urge and kind of fuels you. This is like full on manipulation and deception. We see as he goes into the area, I think it was last episode or the one before that, and it's all the like pinned up spren, and you're like, okay, obviously as the reader, you're like, this is terrible. There's no explaining that. There's no justifying what's happening here. Like, this is just bad news. Got to get everybody out. And so now I get like, what's the term for it? Like secondhand or firsthand frustration that people aren't just dipping and bailing and like, guys, we got to get away from this voice thing. Like we gotta hightail it out of here. It's quite frustrating that I feel like people aren't fully on board with it, but yeah, nothing super major though in this chapter. I'm feeling a lot of residual fear of the voice and where that may culminate. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. A lot of residual fear and concern rather than major new points going on.
I just think it's interesting that based on the two episodes ago, I don't think all the honor bearers saw the same thing when they went to go hang out with the voice. Because Civi, his I think they were dating you at some point, if I remember right. Civi and Zeth were like hashing it out about the voice, and she was completely shocked about what he saw and had no common experience with that. So I'm still a little confused on what exactly why the voice would show. So the voice, I'm going to make the normal assumption that it's an unmade. Why the unmade would reveal itself to Zeth, unless it's orchestrating all of this to have Zeth make a rebellion. I don't know.
That's something I hadn't thought about, Trevor. Okay, I'm trying to remember now. Last episode, Zeth mentions to one of the girls there who knows the voice that like, hey, this is bad. And there was a really interesting response. I don't remember it with 100% clarity, but it was like she was being deceived and things like that. I'm wondering if other people got the same picture Zeth did. I'm now questioning, are people in like a trance and confused where they just don't believe Zeth? But they saw the same thing? Or was Zeth shown something horrific to spur him to do this, to then get him deemed Truthless, etc., Catalysts, like all the events that we've seen. Was it like a crazy 3D chess in advance play, or was this just Zeth could see the truth where others couldn't? Does that make sense? Is there any legs to stand on with that, or
I could totally see that Unmade trying to make a Zeth truthless. I could absolutely see that being the case. I would like it spelled out a little more if that is the case eventually, but I could see that possibly being the case.
I too am a little confused by what all happened there. I also put at least a little bit of stock into Civi's words. The only other scenario I can think about would be maybe the Unmade revealed more to Zeth than anyone else, simply because the Unmade is thinking that Zeth is the ultimate obedient soldier. That this is finally the one who's going to obey me and do what I say, even when I show him the truth. And then that just ends up not being the case. That Zeth still has enough of a conscience that he says, whoa, this is not okay, I'm out. And that was like honestly a surprise. But especially like in this chapter where the voice is back, it's not like the voice is completely cut off from Zeth. Oh, I got to stop you now. The voice is still like probing and manipulating and taunting. So definitely playing it off as, yes, I'm still in control here.
Yeah. Anything else on 108 before we get to back to Tanavast? Tanavast is visiting, is Ashen and Alaswa or whatever the, no, what's the name of the other planet? Are those the same place?
Yes.
Okay. And we're just referring to Ash, we just refer to Ashen after it blows up.
I think so, yes. I think it's like,
I think it's right here in this chapter, actually. Yeah. So in chapter 107, he says, my followers on Alaswa had died with honor, yada, yada, yada. Their souls fled to the beyond, escaping the planet, renamed Ashen for the smoke and destruction that was now its only biome.
Okay. And Ashen is, the reason I'm confused is because I thought Alaswa was some planet off where Odium is hanging out, not the third planet in the Rosharan system. But as far as I know, Ashen is the third planet in the Rosharan system. I thought. Yeah. And so has Odium's like home planet just been right next door to Roshar this whole time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay. I guess. Yeah. All right. I can handle that, I guess. Okay, so
it did. Quick side note, I didn't know this was what I wanted, but now I really want to see Alaswa, like see the planet of Ashen before it was the planet Ashen.
Yeah,
it's just new cool planet. Like we still have the kind of a bit of the same awe and wonder of like, ooh, what's this planet like that ODM and Honor or whoever were from, you know.
I think to get that, you need the Nail origin story secret project to be able to see.
Yes. That. Yeah. That'd be epic.
Or a back half novella.
Yeah.
Sure.
Whatever that may be.
Anyway, Tanavast's point of view. Yezrian and Nail's uncle, who's the leader of not Odium's people, make peace here at the end of Ashen, and then they follow the rhythms to Roshar, and Honor goes and helps Nail's people, I think. So Nail's uncle, his name is Makabak, which I thought was kind of cool, because Nail's people are the Makabaki people. And as we've known them throughout these last four books. So there's a name to the people. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And then chapter 107 ends on this super ominous note where Tanavas goes back to Roshar and then says, he realizes that the people from Ashen have traveled to Roshar. They've escaped. And then he says, and of course, Raze had come with them. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
All right. 108 through 110. Are we ready? We have quite the turn of events here. Let's actually start with the Yasna Queen Fen quick little scene. So we debated, what, three episodes ago, whether this debate was actually going to happen or if this was just a ruse to keep Yasna in Thalen City. It appears that Taravangian's here ready to do debate class with Yasna, and we're ready. So just wanted to throw that out there before we go into the Kaladin Seth stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it. I kind of wanted to chime in on this when we were talking briefly about Yasna earlier. But yeah, it does seem like we're going to have some kind of battle of the minds, battle of the wits here, which is pretty cool. I'm excited. I'm really curious to see how this all unfolds because Brandon Sanderson, of course, has done a wonderful job of just having excellent dialogue between characters that impressively holds up in these high stakes conversations. So I'm very curious to see how this unfolds. I'm glad it wasn't a fake, you know, a take back of like, we're going to have this really big debate where I'm going to convince these people to join me, you know, and then that doesn't actually happen. And he just brings an army or something would be a little bit lame. At least bringing an army without some form of conversation first. So yeah, I'm curious to see how this goes. So we get this really cool moment, which we're about to talk about, with Kaladin, Zeth, and Nael. I feel like this is going to be another one of those really awesome moments as we near the end of the book that you're going to like look back at and be like, oh, that was such a good scene. Like, I can't, you know, you're rereading the book and you're like, oh, I can't wait to get to this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for. We might not get that, but... That's what I want, of course.
I mean, this is not related at all, but we don't need to go down this road. But you just said when you're rereading the book, that's the scene you're looking forward to. Threw me back to Maya from the previous book. Where is she? We're in day 9, almost day 10. She still hasn't come back from her little Honor Spren side quest. Where I guess I completely forgot about that and would have assumed she would have been back by now.
That's a really good question. I feel like I've kept track of all of our characters. I had forgotten about Maya.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten she's not present and is liable to do something big. So great question. I don't know. I don't think Maya's going to show up in this debate. That's my prediction. But, you know, the question of where is Maya? I don't know. Hopefully coming back this book. Hopefully.
Alrighty. Nael. Waiting for us at the Skybreaker Monastery. Zeth goes and confronts him. Nael says, hey, I order you to submit or listen, or I don't remember what he says. Zeth says, no, but I'm also not going to fight you. So then Kaladin fights him. And boy, is it a fight. What'd you guys think?
Several thoughts. First of which, when it intros into this fight, Nael says along the lines of, yeah, it makes sense you wouldn't fight me because you would instantly lose. Which I do not doubt that Nael could beat Zeth in combat because he's incredibly ancient and had a 1,000 times as much time to practice. You know, I do think of Zeth as like basically our best warrior. You know, probably up for debate, but, you know, incredibly skilled. And he defaults to, obviously, Zeth is a bit emotionally pressed in this moment and considering things, but he defaults to Kaladin. And doesn't he say, like, Kaladin has bested me, which I guess that's referring to, like, Words of Radiance. But I guess I didn't even think about that, that these characters have fought each other. And Kaladin did win, you know.
Yeah.
So that just kind of, I've been thinking, because of all the situations that Zeth ends up in these one-on-one combat scenes that he wins, I guess I'd forgotten that Kaladin kind of had a one-up on him. So anyways, that's how it intros, kind of setting up this power dynamic. Nail is still like, okay, whatever, I'm gonna win in like 2 seconds, so it doesn't matter. Nail also feels a great sense of justification for killing Kaladin. That's some of the dialogue that's ongoing in this fight, is that he sent Helleran to kill who was it that they said to kill? Amaram or something like that?
Yeah.
And little did he know it was Kaladin that he should have been worrying about at that time. Anyways, their fight ensues. Kaladin is sweating bullets, and Nail admits that he's having to use his full herald powers, which they never use.
Yeah.
against mortals. And some more power comparison for you. He admits, right, that the only person who's bested him in one-on-one combat is Lyft.
Yes.
Which was,
yes,
crazy for me to think of. And they were like, oh, she didn't use the fork, did she? Anyway, it was pretty funny. There was a lot happening in this scene. It is one of the things I want to get across. So much dialogue, action. Like, this is a huge scene. Absolutely crazy. And, I mean, I'll hand it over so y'all can chime in as well. But it does not end with just this fight. Like, we end up going in an entirely different direction. Kaladin does not win. He is on the brink of death when Zeth starts to step in and try to save Kaladin. And they end up going all sorts of ways. But before we go further, do y'all have more thoughts or points to share on this? I realize I kind of ran with the whole scene here.
Oh, you're good.
I was just going to point out one more thing before we get into the fight itself and the song and the flute and everything. At the beginning of the fight, there's an important detail. Zeth doesn't like pick Kaladin as his champion. Kaladin goes full honor is dead, but I'll see what I can do. Like, jumping in to help him.
I will protect those who cannot protect themselves. I think he actually says that.
I think he might. But Zeth,
then,
I was going to
focus. Yeah, no, he does. And then Nail's like, oh, Windrunners.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Zeth, though, in this scene, is doubling down, fully committing to no more violence. Remember the very last challenge he did was against his sister. Like, surprise, your sister is. And so Zeth goes, you know what? I'm not going to fight you. And then sister pulls back. He does the same thing here, knowing that Nail is about to kill him. He knows, yep, that Nail is going to just kill him. And Zeth makes the choice that, no, I am going to choose not to fight anymore, not to kill. Even if that means you just kill me and it's all done here. That is a bold line in the sand, which I think is what we've been trying to get out of Zeth for a long time. Zeth, the whole, yep, dynamic we've been battling is, Zeth, stop asking for orders, you got to choose. You got to decide what you're going to do. Callan has been pushing him for this. I think this is it. This is it. He makes the choice right here now. I'm going to die for the choice that I make, which is to not fight you. And then Kaladin jumps in to save him and sue the whole duel. But that moment with Zeth, actually, I thought was big.
Was, I think he admits, I could be wrong about this. I don't remember the quote exactly, but I think he admits to himself that it was the wrong decision. Doesn't he say something like he knows that Zeth or that Nail would have killed him? It was not where he was going to pull back. He knows without a doubt that Nail was going to kill him right then. It was not a like, oh, I'm going to stop right before I get there. And I think he has a second thought about that. I don't remember for sure if he might not state he regrets it, but he knowingly admits that he would have died there at least.
No, I think he quoted it nearly exactly how the book has it. You're right. He decides not to fight, and then it says, yeah, it was the wrong choice. He knew in that instant Nail would not hold back.
Yeah.
I'm grateful he's at least admitting, yep, that is the wrong choice. I shouldn't just essentially commit suicide just by letting him kill me outright. I'm grateful. And it was cool because so Kaladin steps up, and then later on when Kaladin is against the ropes, Zeth also steps up, which was really cool to see them go back and forth. Zeth kind of trying to talk to him, distract him, I guess, various things. Kaladin gets absolutely like beat up. He gets like punched in the gut, breaks a couple bones, like can't see, can't breathe type of thing. Instinctively, it specifies he can't, doesn't know if it was by choice or instinctual that he sucks in Stormlight. And then Nail proceeds to suck in all the Stormlight in the room and say, no Stormlight. Let's it all poof away. It really felt like a boss fight. Like, oh, you've made it far enough into the boss fight that he's like powering up, or he's like stealing your resources and making phase it really two. Hard for you to finish him. Yes, exactly. Phase two of the boss fight happens. It felt like I was watching a Dark Souls battle. Crazy. This is one of those scenes that I desperately want to see on screen, by the way.
There's a detail before we get to phase two, which I wanted to highlight. I think, Elliot, you brought this up in our live reacts channel for our patrons. You saw, and I saw as well, I would have mentioned this if you hadn't, there's still something going on with Nail. There's still something weird with some sort of investiture power going on, because Kaladin is the well-trained warrior that he is. He makes a commitment with his spear, and Nail still gets out of the way. I don't write that off as Nail's 1,000 years old and just better. I write that off as something extra physical,
extra.
Yes.
Supernatural.
Something magical is going on here. And it's not just, I don't think it's Stormlight, because Stormlight was banned. And I think Nail is the type of guy to do that or to listen to that. However, I think there's some sort of extra surge binding going on here. Some old ashen surge binding, maybe, or some sort of direct tap into investiture that doesn't require honor as a shard. I don't know what, maybe breaths. I don't know, but there's something odd going on here that I don't just write off to skill issue.
I have incredibly mixed feelings on this. I remember having similar thoughts, Trevor, reading this. I think I would say ended up in the camp that, okay, Nail is the way more experienced, yada yada. Like, you know, Talm, for example, we see the scene where he like breaks out, and nobody else could go like barehanded, go crushing skulls, you know, like with the these fused and things like that. And so I do think it's believable that he's just a step ahead of Kaladin, but I would also believe that there's something else. We know that there's all sorts of capital C connection things that are with our heralds and like Ishar. I could easily believe it's something like that. I mean, we've seen all sorts of trickery throughout these monasteries. So if they were like, yep, actually Nail was pulling from some other thing or had some other thing moving him, absolutely would believe it instantly. That doesn't seem weird. That doesn't seem like a cop out. But I also do believe that he is that good, actually.
Sure.
So I do. I'm like, Kaladin is like the best, but if you were a warrior trapped at your age for 1,000 years, I would believe you could be better than Kaladin for sure.
Sure. So. But I think it's important, the reveal that we just got, that Nail is from Ashen and had surge binding before Honor was involved. That's what killed Ashen. That's what blew up the planet. So I think there's something maybe Odium tied here that's going on, where he's directly tapping into surge binding without any sort of limits from Honor.
And to your point, at the end of this scene, it's almost like scales fell off his eyes in a way. So I think we should probably talk through the rest of the scene and we could a little bit there. So it goes on, and while Zeth is defending Kaladin, Kaladin has the revelation that he needs to play the song. He needs to play this tune or tone of Roshar that he knows will help Nail remember things about his past. He knows he can't win by strength of arm, but by other means. So he pulls out his flute. It gets smashed to bits. Ends up playing his song with Syl as a shard flute, which we'll come back to and talk to.
And starts playing the Wander Sail.
Yes.
I needed to get that out there.
Pretty much, yeah. And fast forward, we'll go back and talk more details, but fast forward, it works. It works in this moment where Nail is like, I used to be a good person. I used to stand up for the little guy. And now I've lost sight of that. And he wants them to kill him. But they instead offer to help and promise him that there is help that you can receive, like, this can get better. And that's essentially where we leave off. There's more details in there. I want to talk about the
flute. And then his Spren flies away.
Yes, that's a good detail that will, you know, pretty crazy. But getting there, it was kind of like an awakening moment. The song in that moment was a bit of an awakening point for Nail. Do you think that maybe if there is some connection you're referring to, Trevor, or some connection to investiture, do you think that could have been severed here? Was he being held back, or was he just delusional from 1,000 years of everything? And this like snapped him out of that.
The second one, I think.
Okay.
I have mixed feelings on this music thing. I think it could be quite cool to see it on screen or to hear this scene, et cetera, et cetera. My brain thought it was a little weird. Do you guys have any thoughts on it before I go on?
I do have some thoughts on this. So I feel like I've been somewhat of the resident fan of the way that music has been used throughout these books. It's been a very background thing for a long time, a little more so in Rhythm of War. We talked about it. But it's been a big thing. And I thought this was neat, and I really liked it. It didn't feel cheesy to me. One thing that I think is neat is, I don't know all the science, like the details of this, but I know that there's a lot of science linked to music and memory. It's used like in therapeutic ways and with like Alzheimer's and dementia, you know, patients, in ways that can be shown to be helpful. Not always the case, but my understanding is that there's a lot of evidence that shows that. So I was thinking through that lens of, it's almost like this brought back memories that he hadn't considered or thought through in who knows how long. And he's essentially been lost to the history in his mind. And this is what brought those memories rushing back, you know?
But I have no issue with what you just said, Paul. The issue I have is, for the whole book, it has gone out of its way to tell you how bad Kaladin is at this flute. And the wind is supposed to be returning each song that Kaladin has played back to him in this moment of power. And I just kept thinking, all right, how bad does that sound? If we're playing all these bad melodies on top of each other, layered on top of each other, back to Kaladin at the same time, I could see that being really, really funny.
Yeah, you were right about that. I didn't even think about that. And it is funny that they've made a point to specify how bad he is at this flute.
Right. It's his rhythms being played back to him. Like, it's not the wind playing the music. It's the wind returning Kaladin's song to him. The bad music. This is not an actual complaint. I just could not get that out of my head of how bad this must sound.
No, that's fair. Do you think actually that Nail smashing the real flute and Kaladin using Syl as a flute made the difference? Do you think Syl could have like fixed it? You know, now it's like
I'm sure Syl sounded great. I just couldn't get that out of my head.
Which, I don't know if y'all have any other thoughts. If not, I want to briefly talk about the Syl flute, because there were some comments in the chapters about the Syl flute. Because when I don't remember how the dialogue goes exactly, well, but
hold on the Syl flute.
Okay.
Elliot, did you have something to mention about the Nail superpower thing from like 10 minutes ago?
I did have one more thing there. If we want to jump back to that super fast before we go talk about the song battle stuff more. There's one other thing you guys didn't mention that was brought up by one of our community individuals in our Discord. Shout out to Yoslo, jumped in our live reactions chat where we were posting our initial reactions to this. And Yoslo jumped in and said, is Nail using fortune to do this? And I think that would be like different, a whole different magic system, if you will, right, that he's tapping into, not necessarily just investiture, it's maybe his interaction, his bond, his connection directly with a shard, who seemed to be very fortune heavy, allowing him to, like, in the middle of battle, see the future, see the strike coming, and supernaturally dodge it using that somehow. And it's not investiture powered, it's not surge binding linked to Ashen, although I actually really like that idea. Is it something separate under the capital F fortune? That I thought that was a pretty clever idea.
Or is that it just burning ATM?
Yeah. Ooh, there we go.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, that's not using Stormlight, so I guess it's good, right? No, I could absolutely see that. I didn't consider fortune. That one doesn't pop into my head often, because I feel there's very few characters I have to consider Fortune for. I always think of it with Hoid, but rarely with our other characters, and that's a really good point. I think that could sway me a bit on my stance of he's just more experienced and better. Fortune makes a lot of sense for this fight. We've seen that in other places in the Cosmere, so I think that makes sense.
All right, back to the Sylph Flute thing. Doesn't she ask a question of why are we doing this before she turns into a flute? What's the importance of the song? I don't understand, or something like that.
Yeah, I think she gets confused.
Lost. Yeah,
she gets confused. Kaladin, why are you trying to bring the flute out now?
Right.
Nail just broke your ribs, and we're fighting for our life. Why are you pulling out this stupid flute? You can practice that later if you survive. So he does do that, and Kaladin is convinced that he's going to have to trigger these memories or something to convince Nail. Is this where Kaladin also thinks back to the conversation he had with Wit, right? Is this where that happens?
Yes, it is. And I don't remember what line that he thinks back to with Wit.
He mentions, Wit says something about, I'm paraphrasing poorly, something along the lines of, Wit tells him, you're going to have to win a battle, some kind of unwinnable battle, but it won't be through strength. It will be through, I don't remember. Terrible paraphrasing.
Jog my memory. He tells him it'll be the hardest test you've ever had, and you won't be able to do it with the spear, basically.
That's right. Yes. That.
I remember from the preview chapters when we got the flute that you guys weren't doing the preview chapters, but I was doing the preview chapters with Ranksk and Tim. At the time, which was about 9 months ago now, everybody was putting so much stock in this Hoid flute. And what is it going to do? It's super powerful. We're going to go, do crazy stuff with it in Shinovar. And then Nail just breaks it at the end of the story here. That's so funny.
I did think that was really funny, actually. Yeah. Just Kaladin pulls it out for his big moment and just snap.
Yes.
Which I think, humorous a little bit potentially, I think that could be a really cool moment, in a movie where that flute has been built up and built up and built up, and then Nail just goes crunch. And then you get a brief moment of, oh no, everything is lost. And then the mist and the cloud starts to form in Kaladin's hand. And you realize Syl is forming herself into the flute and Kaladin can keep going.
Stretch forth thy hand.
Yeah, something kind of like that.
Exactly.
Stretch forth really cool.
Thy mouth.
Yeah. I think that could be. I thought that was cool here in this moment of Syl, who, you guys were just pointing out, is doubting. In this moment, she's like, what the heck? Why are we pulling out the flute? But she realizes that Kaladin needs her in that moment when the flute gets crushed. And so she forms into the flute, which it actually does not specifically say that it is Syl who is the flute.
Correct.
I mean, it seemed. Putting 2 and 4 and 6 and 10 together, it's gotta be. But it doesn't actually say that.
It's either Syl or it's the wind. The spread of the wind itself is creating the flute. But nine parts, the odds are 9 to 1 that it's Syl.
It gotta be, right?
Yeah, it's
Syl. Yeah. But because doesn't Syl say what the comment I wanted to bring up is Syl has a line saying, I don't think we're supposed to do this, but she's not supposed to become a flute. I'm assuming that there's some, my take on that is that there's some complicated interaction or investiture with Syl, Aspren, and her Radiant creating music. I don't know if that's weird. That puts a lot of weight on this mystical power of music. I don't know, but that's the only thing I could think of. Because we've seen these Radiant Sprens basically able to be any tool that the Radiant could need. You know? So why not a violin? Why not a flute? Why not a tuba? You know?
A tuba. Yes.
You could have a whole Knights Radiant orchestra. That'd be awesome. So I was surprised, but I don't know. Do y'all have thoughts on this? I was trying to figure out, why is she not supposed to be a flute? What problems does that cause? And I don't know. Yeah. I want to know your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that comes to my head is if you played a pure tone on a Radiant flute, things might explode.
That's fair. It could be dangerous.
I think Syl's hesitancy here is not the flute necessarily, and it's just the, hey, you should be fighting this guy, not trying to sing him a lullaby.
Right. Or maybe Syl's not even allowed to intervene since there's no Stormlight. Like, maybe she's hesitating on even joining.
Right. I think she's saying, because one of her lines is she says, this is dangerous, maybe we should run. I think she's just trying to say, we should either fight or get out of here. Playing music is silly.
Right.
Okay. Maybe so. I'd actually be curious to know more thoughts if you're listening to this, either in our Discord or in the comments of this video. Let me know, because I definitely, while reading it, I definitely had the impression that she was playing with some risky territory by becoming a flute, and that felt significant to me. I don't know if this is like something we're getting close to fifth ideal territory or what. Also, I'll go ahead and get it out there. I've got to make the joke. I've been holding on to this one for a while. Does this count as Kaladin and Syl's first kiss?
No, because it specifically says the wind is playing the flute, not Kaladin.
No.
Kaladin doesn't play the Syl flute. The wind does.
Okay. I don't know. Gotcha. I think this is their first kiss because he, he's putting his lips on there, you know. Some point. So
no, I refuse.
This is their first kiss.
I don't care what logic you throw at me. I refuse. That did not happen.
What if Syl brings that up as a joke, like in three chapters?
She would do that.
That would not surprise me at all. Yeah.
All right. We bring up the Wander Sail to confront Nail. Who's in the tower? And Nail has to say, nobody. And that is, it is a quite, I, this scene definitely hit home for me that this scene was quite good in the Kaladin versus Nail scene. However, I was listening to this scene in the car with my family in the car, and my wife has listened to like maybe 2 hours total of this book, scattered throughout the entire book of just when I've been listening to it. And she was quite confused on what was happening. She's like, isn't this like the god guy talking to Kaladin? Now we're playing music. What on earth is going on? And I didn't even bother trying to explain it. I'm like, there's so much I'd have to explain to you. Just, it's fine.
Hold on. Do you have a second to read the other 109 chapters leading up to this?
Right. Exactly. I tried to give her a brief explanation of we're trying to hear his insanity and stuff like that. But anyway, the line that Kaladin says multiple times in this scene, why did you become a herald, Nail? And he circles back to serve justice for the little guy. I I became a herald to defend the weak and be the honorable herald that I once was. This is really good content for me with Nail and Kaladin. Having Kaladin try his darn best to reach Nail and remind him who he used to be. Like, I did not have high stock in Nail before this book, even before this day 9, but now I'm all for Nail trying to sit in the breach against the darkness like he used to do. Like, I'm a big Nail fan.
And we get an explanation in this chapter. We get a why the heck is Nail so transfixed with the law? It's stupid. He's being mean to everyone. He's making terrible jumps in logic, super flawed. Why are you so stuck on the law? He explains it in this chapter, and in a fairly plausible and believable way, I feel like, where he says, it's in this section where he's processing all those things you were just talking about, Trevor. He's starting to remember who he was. He's starting to rediscover that, I was a champion for good. And he kind of remembers and spews out to Kaladin, I realized I couldn't trust my mind. I realized that I was slipping. I realized that I was going crazy. And so I knew I needed something outside of my mind to latch onto, or I would just become insane and untrustworthy. And what he latches onto is the law. And that's why he's so resolutely refusing to let go of the law, because that's his lifeline. That's he trusts the law more than himself, because he had like a breakdown moment where he was like, shoot, my mind is slipping. I'm losing it. And then the law just became everything for him. Like, that's, I buy that. I can see that.
I understand what y'all are saying. This is the difference of, you know, we took the Knights Radiant order quiz. I'm a Windrunner and you are both Skybreakers. So true. Maybe it resonates more with you. I did see the point. He specifies that he hurt someone by accident, by mistake back then. But to me, it felt like how I feel when Zeth, ironically, as another Skybreaker, it felt like when Zeth makes a mistake or fears making a mistake. Like, okay, back to him measuring ingredients. And he's like, nope, I measured exactly. And the cook still didn't like it, you know? And then he starts internally questioning crazy amounts. Like, oh, I must have messed this up. I must have messed that up. Something is wrong. You know, it felt a bit extreme to me. I see the reasoning. I see the logic of, I feel I can no longer trust myself, so I want to trust in something else. But it felt a little bit extreme to me. I think Nail has gotten incredibly more interesting this book, but and we get this culmination that he he wants a change, at least. Somewhat wants things to be different. I'm holding my breath still, just because the amount of history we have with Nail. I do believe that this is very genuine, these changes here, but, you know, there's a lot going on. So, like I said, I'm holding my breath.
And don't get me wrong. I think it's still a very flawed outlook. It is still an incorrect worldview to say the law is paramount and cannot be flawed. Like, yeah, that breaks down all over the place, as Kaladin has kept pointing out. But this little segment I thought was quite good, in that at least it gives you a, oh, okay, I can see how Nail got there.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Ellie, did you want to read this quote that you have in the outline?
Oh, there's a fun quote in here. It's not like epicest of quotes, but it was a little nugget buried in there I thought was great, because prior to like the light bulb moment, which we just talked about for the last 5 minutes there, prior to this, one page earlier, Nail is still resisting. He's still, why are you playing me a song? This is dumb. I don't put stock in any, I do not pay attention to made up stories, is what he says. And Kaladin's comeback, very wit-esque and very great. He says, made up stories have proven to be some of the most real things in my life. And that was one of the moments where I put the book down and I went, yes, yes, I can relate to that 100%. Yeah. That's very much my experience with some stories, not all, but some of the really best stories that I've read are completely made up, completely fictional, imaginative, and yet the things I've discovered in them are some of the most real things I've ever learned in my whole life. So all the doubters, all the naysayers out there, oh, you read fantasy fiction. Oh, you have a podcast on fantasy fiction. I get a lot of eye rolls when I tell people I do a podcast on fantasy fiction books. This is why. Those made up stories have some of the most real stuff you'll ever find. You tell them, Kaladin.
Anything else for the episode, gentlemen?
I don't think so. That does kind of get us to the end. I'm very curious where this scene is next.
The sprint. We have to talk about the sprint. Nails Spren coalesces and shows up not as a person, but as a terror in reality or whatever. Reminder, this is a fifth ideal relationship between Nail and Spren, and the Spren flies off. Would that imply a incoming sever of a bond, or what just happened?
It's in the context or kind of put next to Syl and Zeth Spren 24601 or whatever his name is. It's not that, it's the other numbers.
12124.
Yeah, thank you. They join in on the kumbaya. Nail has had the breakdown, like, for the right reasons, is realizing this. They like sit down, or they're like collapsed in a pile, like crying together. A very emotional moment, actually. Three guys here like holding hands crying, and Syl and 24601 come in and like join in, and then that's when Nail Spren appears, looks at them, and leaves. Like the other Spren are in on this. Nail Spren is not.
Darn Skybreaker Spren. I'm curious if we get more of that relationship before the end of the book or not, or if it just flies off and we don't talk to it ever again or ever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anything else?
That's all I got.
Alrighty. Let's reconvene next week with 111 through 114. Thank you for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See ya.
Toodles.